Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of the 9 Years Podcast Lockdown Show. My name's Kevin Boris, and today we're joined by an international panel of experts. It's not the first team. It's not Nick and Stu. It's not the development squad, which is me, George and Chris, but we've got international people. So we're going to do it in reverse order. So George is joining us. Of course, George is a Welshman currently based in Cornwall. How are you, George?
I'm great. How are you, Kevin?
Very well. How are you coping with no football?
Don't answer
that question. It's a stupid question. I wish I hadn't asked that question at all. Also joining us for the first time for some time is our half German, half Dutch friend from Switzerland, Mr. Mark Hendricks. Hello, Mark.
Grüezi boy, as they say over here.
Do they?
Yeah, you've got to adapt very quickly to the customs and everything that you're living in, and you don't want to be too much of an outsider. So the first thing you've got to learn is how to greet people. And here in Switzerland, everybody greets everybody. If you're just walking down the road, they will take it completely offensively if you don't greet them and you just say "Grüezi." Really? Yeah, yeah, yeah. They get really, really quite uppity. They're kind of like "Grüezi." You're like, "Oh Christ, okay, sorry, I forgot." Sorry.
I've been to Switzerland about 6-7 times for work and never spoken to a soul. So maybe that's my problem. The last time I went to Switzerland, I was walking through the airport in Geneva, thinking, my God, that bloke looks like Woody Allen. And it was Woody Allen.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
You're my fault for going to Geneva.
I should have done. So we're also joined by our special guest of the day. Again, a Welshman who's just come back from Australia and a part of our 2016 League Two playoff winning squad. Welcome, John Meads. Hi, John.
Hi, Borada from Wales. Like I said, just got back only about a month ago. But yeah, it's like I was saying to you guys just before we went on air, it's nice to be back on home soil.
Yeah. Are you in Wales now?
Yeah, we're in a place, I'm not sure many of you guys will know, a place called Selly, which is just outside Cardiff.
No, I have to be honest, I've not heard of that town.
You might have heard of Narth, maybe? No, maybe not.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
okay.
So,
yeah.
Uh-huh. I know as much about Wales as you do know much about Switzerland, John. So
yeah.
So it's nice and even anyway. So John, how have you been? B, you spent the last 6 months in Australia. What were you doing? It's a holiday, or were you studying, or what were you doing?
Well, it was always a kind of a thing that me and my fiance wanted to do at some point. We wanted to maybe do a bit of traveling, but with football, plan was to be playing probably until I was at least 35. Unfortunately, that wasn't to be. So when I stopped, we really considered it, and then we put things in place to go out there. We managed to do it, which was amazing. 6 months. I was actually doing, when I went out there, I had a few connections and I knew someone who worked for Melbourne City. And I thought I'd arranged a coaching role there to help out. But when I got there, it wasn't quite what I expected. It was more of a scouting role. So I did that for a little bit, but it wasn't kind of my cup of tea. So I was fortunate enough. I've got a bit of personal training behind me. I ended up working in a gym in Melbourne, doing a bit of personal training, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Okay, that wasn't the answer I was expecting at all. Because am I right in thinking, you hear things about footballers. As far as we know, you have a twin who is a doctor. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Right. Is it an identical twin?
Identical twin.
Who's a doctor. Did you not ever think... Did he not follow
are
you...
Are we speaking to the real John Meads here, or are we speaking to the identical twin?
This is a good question.
Yeah. You'll never know, guys. You'll never know. You have to ask me some really interesting questions about Wimbledon, see if I get them to...
Okay. Well, there's a good one coming up. All right. So... was football always your kind of preordained kind of career in his medicine, or could you have either of you gone the other way, as it were? Could we have been talking to him and you'd have been treating patients?
Yeah, without doubt. Actually, he was playing for Cardiff up until about under 14, same as me. But unfortunately, the coach there, for whatever reason, didn't really rate Ads, who was obviously my twin brother, and he got let go at Cardiff at that age. And kind of then he went on his own path. He played a lot of rugby to a really high level, actually. And without a couple of injuries, he maybe could have made it in rugby. But when that didn't happen, he went through the more academic route. And became a doctor, and he's actually out in Australia at the moment. He's been out there for 3 years, so that's one of the reasons why we did. That's why we chose.
Which position did he play?
He was a right back, right midfielder. So
So yeah. it would have been a De Silva brothers style.
Both flanks, yeah. He's a very good footballer. He's actually plays for the Australian medic team, and they went on the World Cup and I think got to the semi-finals actually. So.
Did we ever attempt to refer by a career in medicine yourself, or was that?
I think down the line, if I wanted to do it now, it would have been really hard to do when I was playing football. Even though I know some players of professional football, sportsmen have done it. I know Jamie Roberts, the Welsh centre Lions player. He's a doctor, and he did his gradually as he through his career. But I think as a footballer, it's really hard to do. So it was kind of like something I thought about, but. When I retired about 2 years ago now, I think the process of me becoming a doctor at my age, I know I'm still super young, but I just thought there'd be other things I could do. But fine.
So what happened was the last thing that I remember reading about your career after, I know we're jumping a bit ahead, but after your injury cut your career short, you got a position in the under-14s, was it, or under?
Yeah, so I was doing the under-14s. I was doing a few other roles. I was doing some more mentoring for one-on-ones. I was working with the youth team a little bit with Robbo, and it was really, really good. And then there was an option for me maybe to stay on at Wimbledon to go into more of a permanent coaching role, but we'd already planned to go to Australia, so at the moment that was kind of then put on hold.
Go on, Mark. You had another question. Is your hand up? For those listeners, we can see each other. I thought Mark had his hand up, but he's just overbalanced on his chair.
I am overbalanced on my chair, and I was going to tip over a bit. That's why I was like, I didn't want to make too much of a noise to interrupt. But anyway, moving swiftly on.
Mark only hit his head in the back of a chair. That's very funny. I'm just not laughing at that. So can we? Let's. I know we don't want to talk about. We're trying to keep things happy and light. But obviously, you know, your career ended suddenly. For us as fans, we're like, oh, that was a surprise. That was a real shock. I guess it wasn't as much of a shock to you. It must have been a bit more of a build-up. But how did that happen? Because you didn't seem to be... You had a really good season, sort of injury-free season, and then stopped. And I think we were really surprised by the severity and the suddenness of it.
Yeah, it was a difficult one. I'd obviously been suffering my ankle since the season I came back, which was the season after we got promoted, so at the start of that first League One season. And it was an old injury that flared up, which I was out for a year when I was playing for Oxford. And I had a big operation on it, and up until then, it gave me no problems. I thought I was over it. Unfortunately, it flared up that pre-season, and I think you remember I was in and out of the team a lot through my injury, and we tried everything that season. I managed to still get, I think I played managed to play about 26 games that season, which is not bad, but obviously in a 46 game plus get cut games, it's not what you want. And then, so we decided to get an operation in the middle of those two seasons, came back, similar thing happened all the way through League One. Towards the end of the season, I thought I was managed to get to grips with it a little bit better. But then I broke down again in pre-season, and then that's when I decided to kind of call it a day through medical advice and a few other things. Because I think what people don't see behind the scenes, I'd been struggling for about 2 years with it. When we tried everything, I was playing with injections, and it was really difficult. Yeah, and it was a hard decision to make because I think I was actually having a pretty good pre-season. But I remember after one of the pre-season games, I think it was. I can't remember who exactly we played that preseason. It might have been Reading, because I know we played Reading a few times. I remember not being really able to walk on it for 2 days. So at that point, I was like, I need to weigh up my long-term health as well as other things. So it was a really difficult season, and I was actually really good. Yeah, really good.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you were. We were as fans, obviously. But was it a case of that you could have carried on, but you could have ended up with, you know, a far worse injury in your 40s?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also, I think it would have been I think it was just the pain and that my ankle situation was getting worse, and I think it had been detrimental to my performances going forward as well. So I kind of had to weigh that up as well. I think that first League One season, we actually played some really good stuff, and I think we were almost in the top. We were definitely in the top 10 around Christmas time, weren't we?
Yeah.
And it was before. It was around the Oldham game, which had to come out of the team again. And I remember I was gutted, and I was out for a longer period of time. So, yeah, there was a lot to it. So yeah.
But at the end of the day, you managed to end up with a playoff final win medal, and you know there are only a handful of League Two, League One players who can actually have that memento, so to speak, for that time. So surely that's got to be a huge positive point on your career. That was just, if you can you run us through that day, just the beginning of the day of the playoff final?
Well, I don't want to bring back an injury again, but I remember I was so touch and go with that playoff final because I definitely had my best season of my career that season. And up until Christmas, I know, I personally thought we played some good stuff and we were a bit unlucky. Bar one or two games, I remember the Stevenage probably game sticks out for fans and for us as well. And there was a bit of a turning point. But up until then, leading up to then, we were playing some good stuff, but we were drawing too many games and obviously we didn't reflect in the league table. And then second half of the season, we were obviously everything clicked and we were doing really, really well. And then for me to get injured in that Dagenham Redbridge game, what was it, three or four games before we'd already basically secured playoffs. Yeah. And I knew as soon as I went over on it, I was like, oh no. And it blew up straight away. And I was just like, as soon as Dougie was getting stretched off, I was saying, Dougie, what do you reckon? I'm going to make it for the final. And he just remember like, well, we'll have to see how it goes. And then I did everything up until then. The boys obviously did a great job against Accrington. And then we obviously got to the final. And I was honestly one or two more days early, and I don't know if I'd have made it. So I still didn't know if I was going to get on. So I don't know what was going through my head. And then obviously the day came and the starting lineup was announced, and I knew I wouldn't be starting because I wasn't match fit at all, which was, even though in my head I was like, oh, we want to play. And then obviously when the gaffer at the time, Neil Ali, said, get ready, I was like, it's amazing. But it was probably one of the most nervous I've been because I think I came on with about 25 minutes to go. It was actually 0-0 at the time. And that's as a sub, such a hard, because you don't want to come on and then feel like, oh, the boys have done such a good job, let the team down. But I was like, I wanted to try and make a positive impact. And luckily we ended up winning 2-0. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Who did you come on for? Did you come on for Sean Rigg?
I think I came, no, Riggy didn't get on, unfortunately. I think I came on for Connor Smith.
Yeah. And I forget that Sean Rigg didn't start that game. I've just, in my head, Rigg starts it again.
So
he was tattooing himself, wasn't he?
Tucked in on the right, wasn't he? So I came on and straight swap at right midfield, which I think I'd only played there once or twice that season anyway. So I was like, okay. But I remember coming on, I was just at the start, just keeping it simple. And I got into my groove and I think I did. I played actually right for those 25 minutes. So I was quite happy.
With the playoffs against Accrington, you were certainly in the crowd, right? I mean,
Yeah.
For both matches. Yeah. So when Pedroia scored that absolute screamer.
Yeah, it was a screamer. I was sitting right behind.
I was in a pub in Teddington with a couple of Wimbledon fans and we were just looking at it. And when he hit it, I actually turned around and went, no, it's just Pedroia kind of thing. You know, that whole what was his name? It's only whatever his name is, the Arsenal player who once scored. Tim Lovejoy's famous, it's only whatever his name was. Oh, it's only Ray Parler. I was like, it's only Pedroia. Yeah. And they hit that and it went in. And I just looked at them and just went, oh no. And that for me was an absolute heart sinker.
Yeah, because...
How did you feel?
Yeah, completely devastated because I think I was banking on the boys doing the job and obviously having a shot at playing at Wembley because I knew it was touch or good, but I knew that I was going to be able to get back for it. So I was just willing the boys on as much as possible, but when he hit that shot and they went in, I was like, "We're in a pickle here," because the momentum was with them. I think at that point we were going out, weren't we, on away goals?
Mm-hmm. It was aggregate. There are no away goals.
Oh yeah, there wasn't.
It was on aggregate.
But they would
scored the penalty. Yeah, they scored the penalty first, and then it was Pedroia's goal.
Yeah, and they were up on the tie window. Yeah. So I was like, this is going to be, it's going to be a, like a monumental effort to get back in this, especially being away from home, momentum with going with them, especially with our late goal. It kind of is a role reversal. And then obviously the boys managed to pull it out. It was unbelievable.
I thought it was actually karma coming back to bite us because, you know, they had that goal disallowed in the league right at the stroke of half time.
That popped up on Twitter the other day. I think Dean Josh Windass tweeted it or something, and someone tagged me in it. I couldn't remember. That is still to this day. I don't know how we got away with that.
Well, we got away with it. And that's the way it goes.
It makes it even worse because I think they went down. They went down into the playoffs on the last day through goal difference as well.
That had that goal been allowed, which really should have done, we wouldn't have been in the playoffs, and they would have gone straight up. Other than that, everything's perfect. That is Mingoya you're talking
meant
about.
To be.
Pietro Mingoya was the...
Mingoya, sorry, yeah.
Mingoya. I was right behind that Mingoya shot. Since you hit that, I thought, oh no. It was just one of the you won't see a ball hit better than that.
I think he scored a few good goals against us, which is really annoying, actually.
He was a very good player. But going back to that season, so Dagenham and Redbridge, obviously, you remember you getting injured away. The home game, this is not meant to be rude at all because you have so many good performances. That home game against Dagenham and Redbridge, where, I'm going to be honest, you gave the ball away.
Yeah, I can remember it. Like it was yesterday.
You did one of your Cruyff turns inside. And then I think you gave it away to Cureton, who put that cross in. And Ben Wilson just somehow lost the ball. We don't know how he lost the ball. It was a simple cross, palmed it into his own net. That was the day I just thought, no. I was convinced from that day we weren't going to make it in the playoffs or weren't going to go up. That was just such a... One of those games where everything went wrong. We should have won 5 or 6.
Kevin, call it like it is. It was a typical Wimbledon thing to happen.
Yeah. It kind of was. It was just one of those games. Although, as I said at the time, I do another podcast, and then the name of my other podcast, Time Management for Sausages, came from that game. So I took a friend of mine who'd never been to a game before, and she was bored out of her mind, and just right at the end when Mikey T said, the referee's the fourth official has indicated there'll be 4 minutes of time added on for stoppages. He went, did you say time added on for sausages? And I said, no, stoppage. Why would it be sausages? But I wrote it down. So that was such a stupid thing to say. Sorry, Kat, if you're listening. But that's the name of my podcast. So that game did actually have some positives.
That was a little silver lining then for you.
There was a little, very small.
That it helped some people out.
Yes, it did. Anyway. Well, we've got two games to play with you, John, if you don't mind. So George will hopefully, this is the kind of bit where you're all like, go, please get this right. George, please explain to, John is a very intelligent man, but please explain the rules of this game as simply as you possibly can.
Okay, so this is a guess a player game. It's a former AFC Wimbledon player that you've played with. You'll get 3 rounds of clues. The first round of clues is 5 players this player has played with. The second round of clues is 2 managers this player has played under, and then there's a final giveaway clue towards the end if you haven't got it yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so how many players are there?
The answer is 1 player.
1 player.
But they're 5 teammates, basically.
Yeah, 5 teammates are the clues.
So you've played with him at AFC Wimbledon. Also, we have a guess as well. Now, the person that so far, Aaron Ramsdale, got his one right in less than 2 seconds.
Yes,
but George sometimes has done very well, but we didn't get them at all.
Okay.
Sometimes, equally, George will put a clue in that's wrong, and that you'll never get it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I've got it right today.
Please get this Oxford right.
Oxford United.
Chris Wilder, Oxford United, Barry Fuller. No, there is not a. That's not an actual triangle. George, please tell me.
Anyway. Okay, so the 5
John's,
players...
John's looking so confused right now.
There's all kind of curveballs that have been thrown in, which I'm not sure, but we'll give it a go.
Who are the 5 players that this player has played with?
Okay, the 5 players this player has played with are Gary Alexander, Paul Robinson, Tyrone Barnett, George Moncur, and Connor Smith.
Okay, I've got it ready.
Yeah, don't give it away yet, Kevin. I know you've got it.
Well, I've only got it because I've got it right. It's not. I can't pretend
this
I got it
player
right.
Would have played with these people at other clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have played with that player.
Okay.
Yes.
Has he played with some of these players at Wimbledon as well?
Yes.
Okay. Can you just say them again one more time?
Gary Alexander.
Yeah.
Paul Robinson.
Yeah.
Tyrone Barnett. Yeah. George Moncur and Connor Smith.
Okay.
Okay, we've got one guess.
You can have a couple.
Yeah.
One guess. You can have a couple.
Okay.
Not Danny Borman.
No, not Bully.
I only said him because he's probably paid for that. He's been around the longest.
Still going.
He's played with Pele, hasn't he?
He's an absolute machine, that guy.
You know what's throwing me is Moncur.
Yeah, George Moncur. I know he was I swear he was a... Is it Colchester? Yeah. Right, Tom Elliott.
No, not Tom Elliott.
Okay, I'm out. I don't know.
The second round of clues is two managers he's played on.
Okay.
And they are Lee Clark and Russell Slade.
Oh.
Callum Kennedy.
No, that's not Callum.
That's who I was going to say.
It's a good guess, but it's not Callum.
That was my original guess from the first one. I was going to think Borman, because there's at least three Crawley links there.
Russell Slade and Lee Clark.
Yeah. Russell Slade's managed all kinds of players, hasn't he?
Oh, come on. This is great, great listening.
Yeah.
I'm just hearing the cogs going.
Is that it? Is there any more clues?
There's a sort of giveaway clue towards
the end. I don't know, I guess. Okay, there's a guest from elsewhere in my house. Can that guest come in? It's not for me.
Should we wait until... Let's wait until anyone else, if they've got it, then we'll see if they've got it.
Well, it's coming through me.
Yeah.
I'm the conduit.
Okay, who was that, Kevin?
The person who guessed it or the guess?
The guess.
Khaled Mohammed.
No, not Khaled Mohammed.
I'm thinking that this is a player that played with John in his first stint at the club.
On loan.
And not from his permanent time with us.
Ah, oh.
Well, because he could have played with Gaz Alexander then, obviously.
But that's going way back, so...
All right.
It's got to be from your loan time.
Can I go for one more?
Mitchell King.
No, not Matt Mitchell King.
Because he's got to play with Robbo as well, but Robbo's obviously only been at Millwall.
Portsmouth
and us.
Can I have one more guess, George? I think I've got it.
Yeah, okay, go on.
Is it Matt Tubbs?
No, not Matt Tubbs.
Oh, I thought he played with Portsmouth.
I was just about to say that as well.
Would you like the final sort of giveaway?
Yeah. Yeah, we need the giveaway clue.
It better not be it was with John in his first part of his career. No.
This player has won a promotion with us.
Oh. Won a promotion with us. But that could be from the conference up. No.
No, it would have had to have been because you're sure you wouldn't have played with Robbo at Millwall, would he?
Robbo's only played with... unless it's Danny Kedwell.
No, not Danny Kedwell.
He wouldn't play with John, would he? Of course. Go. So I've got after the other guesses, there is another guess from inside my house, isn't it, for me?
George Frankham.
No, not George Frankham.
Ugh.
Because he's been at
Lyle?
No, not Lyle.
But the other guess from inside my house was Ryan Jackson.
No, not Ryan Jackson.
I haven't played Ryan Jackson.
Flummoxed.
Okay.
Look at myself.
Okay, so the answer is Carly Osborne.
Oh,
of course. Yeah.
It's always Carly Osborne, isn't it?
It's either a link or the answer pretty much every show. Because he has played with every player we've ever played for us, I think.
Hang on, isn't that also Barry Fuller?
So he played with Gary Alexander at Brentford, yes?
Yes. Paul Robinson at Millwall. Tyrone Barnett at Bristol City.
Yeah.
George Kerr at Colchester. Connor Smith at Plymouth.
Plymouth.
And then he played under Lee Clark at Kilmarnock and Russell Slade at Grimsby.
Kilmarnock!
You've done a nice array. little tons of Cardies.
That's crass, George. Even for your standards, putting in a Scottish team.
I like that.
That's almost as difficult as the first round of questions. Crikey almighty, you certainly are going to get fired for that.
Well done, George. That is the idea of the game is you fox us.
And yeah, he foxed
all of us.
Yeah, he absolutely foxed us all. And next week it's going to be a player who played in Uzbekistan or something.
Well, no, because there isn't one next week. But no, right. This is the last one, we think.
You'll still throw it in the WhatsApp.
There might be another one. Well, we don't know. There is talk of an extra show. But at the moment, we're thinking this could be the last one. But anyway. So, John, can we talk about Wales?
Of course, yeah.
You play for one of the Welsh youth teams, right? One of the under-U group teams.
I played for Wales from under-16s level to under-21s level. So, yeah, a few caps, a few different countries you played against throughout that time. Obviously, under-16s, you're playing the Victory Shield, which is the big... I'm not sure if they're still doing it, but it's the big competition between the four nations.
In the kingdom.
And that was amazing. Played against some really good players in that. Jonjo Shelby was playing.
That's going to be my question. What, in terms of players that have gone on to bigger and better things, who did you play against? So Shelby's a good one.
Shelby's a really good one. Jack Wilshire, remember when we played him when I was 15 and he seen nothing like it. Jack Wilshire, Wilfred Saha. To be fair, in my age group, there were some really, really good players. Jose Baxter obviously didn't turn out as well as it could have, but I remember when he was 16, he had everything. Again, Emmanuel Thomas was another big one. He actually played at Cardiff a few times because he came on loan to us. But he when he was like 18, he was just unplayable. Remember, we played Arsenal and he went from centre back to centre mid to striker and all in about the space of 20 minutes and scored a hat trick. But I was lucky because Cardiff at the time, I know I've kind of gone off the Wales thing, but because Cardiff at the time was the academy, they managed to get the academy status pretty early. We were in the league with Tottenham, Arsenal, Crystal Palace. So we had a lot of the Premier League teams. So I think that really helped my development. We played against some amazing players. The Tottenham team we played against one game. I think we actually played pretty well and we still lost 5-0. They had Harry Kane, Ryan Mason, Ryan Fredericks. I think he's playing for Fulham now. Andros Townsend. All in that same team. So I think playing against those kind of players like really, really helped me in my future development, definitely.
So who was your Welsh hero growing up as a football fan? Who was the player that you looked up to or idolised more?
Giggsy, probably. I just remember him. That was probably my era. And to be fair, Wales didn't have the best of teams around then, so there wasn't a huge one to pick from. But I remember him obviously being at Man United as well, because I was a United fan when I was little. He was definitely the player I looked up to, and kind of he was a one man show most of the time.
So, which nation was the and I mean collective as a team? Which country was the hardest country that you had to play against when you were playing in the Wales time?
To be fair, we played against some really good national teams. Like we played Portugal, we played Spain, we played Germany, played England, who are obviously always really strong. But the best team I played as a team and just on their day, that they were just unbelievable. Czech Republic. We played them in the 21s, like a European qualifier, and they were just unbelievable. I think it was one of the first times I've seen a team properly play 3-5-2. I know Wimbledon play it now quite a lot, but that's only been quite recent, the last couple of years. Well, this was probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and they played 3-5-2, and we didn't know what to do. They ran us absolute riot. But I think they've got a very good international setup anyway, their facilities and stuff. So yeah, that was probably the best team they played at the park.
So in terms of your say your under 18 squad that you played with, was there one player that you thought this kid's going to make it, going to be a huge player, and didn't?
Was that out of the Welsh boys?
Yeah.
Or the teams I played against?
Teams you played with?
Played with any boys that didn't make it.
That you thought would?
Oh, it's a tough question. No, I think by the time under 18s, a lot of the boys who were standing out went on to good things. I remember Johnny Williams, who's at Charlton now. He stood out for me. He was amazing. And without some of his injuries, I think he would have played more in the Premier League. I remember we played away to Armenia, and he was a year younger than me, so he was playing up, and he that's where he just won promotion with Crystal Palace, and he broke his leg, and he got absolutely clattered. Because he's only small, and he was out then for a while. And he was just coming onto the scene, so I think that halted his progression a little bit. But we had some actually pretty good players. Tom Lawrence, who was at Man United for a bit, now I think he's at Ipswich. Who else was there? Obviously, Aaron Ramsey, who went on way pretty good things, to be fair. And then there's Emir Hughes now, I think he's at Ipswich as well, and you've got Adam Matthews, who did well. So we had actually a pretty good under-21 squad. We actually probably underperformed, and we didn't qualify for the finals, which is a bit disappointing.
Yeah. Can I quickly segue?
I thought you had a segue.
I'm on wheels, actually. When you announced your retirement, did you get any messages from people that were, it was a surprise, like, wow, I haven't heard from him in ages, but oh, that was really nice that you sent me a message.
Oh, loads, absolutely loads. It was actually, I felt it was quite emotional how many messages I got. But I think that's like the football community. I think it's quite a bit of a bubble, and I think all the boys know how hard it would have been for me, and also it can happen at any point. So it was nice. I got so much support from boys I played with. Like I said, hadn't spoken to for years. So it was pretty amazing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I just imagined you coming in through a... Did you watch that? There was a great spoof documentary about the 70s progressive rock band Thotch, starring Simon Day as Brian Pern, the singer. And Brian Pern comes into the park on a Segway, as Peter Gabriel, who the whole thing is based on, comes the other way on a Segway. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Just reminded me when you said Segway of you coming. Just imagine you coming into a park on a Segway. sorry, it's just how my mind works currently.
It's too hilly. It's too hilly over here in Switzerland for Segways. Believe me.
You kind of need to be on in sort of Suffolk, Norfolk, kind of nice flat.
Or Holland.
The Netherlands. Generally, not just Holland. Not Mark, being half Dutch.
I prefer talking about Holland.
I like being pedantic. Anyway, time for another game. Sorry, John. I know you loved the last one so much.
There we go.
This is not our podcast. We're sitting in. We are the
international team.
So this is a very simple game. It's known as the yes-no game, although most of the questions don't require a yes or no answer, but don't worry about that. So it's a rapid fire questions. The answer is either yes or no or an either or. Are you ready?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay. George, do you want to count me in? No, he's drinking. I'll do it. Right. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No.
Correct. Abandon the season or play to a finish behind closed doors for League One?
Abandon.
Did Carol Baskin kill her husband, yes or no?
100%.
Yes. Lost. Good. Lost or manifest?
Lost.
Okay. TV journalist Jonathan Meads or England footballer Beth Meads?
Oh, TV journalist.
Nice one. A week in Barbados with Ashley Bays or a week in Bexhill-on-Sea with Carol Vorderman?
Oh, definitely the first one. Ashley Bays all day.
No. VAR, yes or no?
Yes.
There is a right or wrong answer to this one. Luton or Watford?
Watford.
Oh, well.
Nick's going to love you.
Yes, given. Should we sack George, yes or no?
No.
Nice. Oh. And
even after that.
Kill mom.
And finally, when you're making tea, do you put the bag in first or the milk in first?
Definitely the bag.
Correct answer. The only person who said milk first was James Shea, who then, when he then saw Nick and Stu a bit the week after, said, I got that wrong, can I change my answer? He got so much stick from people.
I was going to say, I already knew he was a bit of a psychopath if you saying that. So,
but thank you. For that. So, I still haven't seen this tiger thing. I don't know. So Carol Baskin, can someone explain again?
Oh, it's... Just switch on Netflix. It's going to be in the top 10 view things.
Is it?
It's amazing, apparently. I haven't watched it yet either, but that's because I've just got into some other shows with my wife. Talking of which, actually. So, John, have you been spending now recently a lot of time just watching Netflix and binging on stuff, or what have you been doing?
Yeah, a lot of Netflix. I'm actually into my cycling a lot, so I'm doing a lot of cycles at the moment around the Welsh countryside, which has been really nice. And then I'm kind of now planning the next stage of what I want to go into over here. It's kind of the next couple of months, a big decision of what kind of direction I want to go in. Whether I stay in the kind of the more personal training, exercising kind of, route, or I go into coaching, or I've recently started doing a bit of looking into property developing and stuff. So yes, it's all kind of interesting at the moment. I'm not
well, sure. If you ever decide to cycle through Switzerland, give us a shout. I'll tell you the routes around here.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure it'll be amazing in Switzerland.
When you were playing for us, were you living permanently in South London, or were you kind of commuting back and forth?
Yeah, no. So me and my partner, we got a place in Wandsworth Common, actually. So we've got a little flat there, which we're renting out now because we're not in London. But again, potential maybe to come back to London. Absolutely love living there. And it's honestly, it's about probably 15-minute walk to the New Plough Lane. So.
Oh, right.
Oh, wow. There you go.
So, yeah, that could draw me back when the new stadium opens up, which is obviously really exciting.
And what was amazing.
So you go ahead, Kevin.
I was asking players about where they live, not just because we want to find out where you live. Just how far players travel for training, and that's one of the reasons when Danny Kepwell gave for wanting to leave was the fact that he couldn't take his kid to school in the morning and travel from Gillingham to New Malta for training every day, and he couldn't. It was a very normal human being reason for not doing it. But I remember Lee Chapman, when he was playing for Portsmouth, lived in Harrogate and would drive from Harrogate to Portsmouth back every single day because he didn't want to be away from his wife, the TV's Leslie Ash. Didn't want to be away from her. So other players who lived much closer were staying for the whole week in a hotel and going back at weekends or whatever. He was driving 300 miles each way every single day. Now, just imagine that players, that surely can't happen anymore. The players told, so did you join us from Bournemouth, didn't you?
Yeah, Oxford. Originally from Bournemouth on loan, and then obviously I went permanently then from Oxford then after that.
Yeah, so when you were at Oxford, were you living in the Oxfordshire kind of region then?
Yeah, I was. I rented out a little house there. Near the centre of Oxford. So. But I remember I haven't got any kids, so it's a completely different situation. I think as soon as players start having kids and a family, it must be so, so hard to kind of...
If I remember correctly, you were rooming, or you were flatmates with Tom Elliott.
Yes, yeah. So I was there with him for 2 years, and then when he signed for Millwall, me and my partner moved up from Cardiff, and we got a place together. Oh, okay. Yes, I mean.
So, I mean, he's obviously gone up now to Salford. Are you still in contact with him at all?
Yeah, I speak to T quite a lot. He's a good pal, yeah.
Would you get him on the show if we continue? It would be nice to have him on. But I'm just thinking that I was talking to another footballer for a different reason about when he signed for his club. He was 23, and the manager who signed him said it'd be best if you got married. And he said, he was single. He said, I haven't got a girlfriend at the time. I've been busy and playing and moving around and stuff. He'd had about 7 or 8 loans in different parts of the country. He said, I haven't got time for a girlfriend. The manager said, well, I think it'd be best off if you meet someone and get married. We want settled players. And all the players he met, the first day of training, all early 20s, all married. And that was their manager, particularly like married, settled players who live within a 10-mile radius of the training ground. Is that, do you get that when you go to a different club? Do you find that the players are all married, or can you pretty much do what you want? Because that's impinging on people's social life and their habits. It's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, no, I don't think you necessarily get that. I think it's more, a lot of managers these days will definitely be like kind of a character reference. So they'll speak to other clubs, they'll speak to players who have played with them, they know, they'll speak to kind of other coaches. And there is a lot more that now than when I first started, because the culture's completely changed. And even 10 years ago, probably wasn't quite as professional with heart rate monitors and all that kind of stuff. So I think that definitely plays into it a little bit more. And obviously there's more money, so you need to get it, every signing needs to be right. So I think that comes in. I'm not sure if they'd ask if you'd tie the knot or anything like that, but definitely comes into managers' heads now. I think more the character and what they're going to be like off the pitch as well as on it.
Yeah, I guess for a squad, my idea, you kind of want players who would just gel normally as friends off the pitch, or if you work together in a, you know, if you work together in a factory, you want people to get have some kind of social, you know, activities together. I guess with football, it's the same thing. You want to, but then be talking to players from the 80s who are saying there were certain other players in the 80s who they didn't particularly get on with and didn't socialise with, hadn't spoken to since they left in maybe 30 years, but on the pitch or during training, they were their best mate. And then,
Yeah, definitely.
That's changed, I guess.
Yeah, definitely changed. I think, obviously going back to the promotion season, it was kind of one of those things that it's really hard to do. You can do all your character referencing and you can do everything, all the back behind the scenes and get as many references with all different players. But it's one of those things, if you get a group of players that just gel together, which is probably a little bit of luck as well, and it helps massively on the pitch. And we just had that season. We went up, I think all the boys, you could have put anyone in a room together and they would have like had a good chat. And it was just that kind of team spirit that the boys managed to have. And again,
So you're talking about the promotion season. I must ask, that Christmas bash. There was a lot of talk about Bayo basically taking over the whole thing and just saying, right, guys, come on, this has got to, you know, get everyone galvanized together and everything. What happened?
I wouldn't say it was Bayo. I think it was just all the boys. I think after that game, we knew that it was a time that it was either going to make or break it when we came back. So I think everyone obviously just let their hair down a little bit and just got together and was like
we were up in Manchester, weren't you?
We were up in Manchester. And the thing is though, I think everyone knew we had something. Like it was definitely there. But for whatever reason, we just hadn't put it all together. And I think that was just like the turning point where we're like, right, it'll be such a shame if we don't take advantage of what we got. And I think then it kind of just, the penny dropped a little bit. It was like, it's time, it's go time now. And
so come on, spill the beans. Who spearheaded that?
I don't think it wasn't really spearheaded by anyone. I think we had so many big characters and a lot of them said different things and it just bounced off each other. I think that was the biggest thing. There was so many big characters. I think we did have probably five or six people who had been captains at different clubs. I think that kind of leadership at different kind of, they all had obviously their way of leading and they had done in the past. I think that coming in together kind of just took us on to the next level, and they all then started adding in their little bit. And even the boys who hadn't been captains, there were some really big characters and people who, and it just kind of, yeah, just kind
okay.
Of,
so was it one big sit down, everyone around the table at once time, or was it kind of into groups, just kind of all saying the same kind of thing? And
yeah,
how did it come about?
Yeah, I think on the train up as well, and we were just like, obviously after that Stevens game, we knew we hadn't performed the way we should have, and we knew the fans weren't going to be happy. And we're like, that it doesn't look great either because we were going away. And but you do need that time. It's a long season. You need that time to kind of just relax. And it is having that company together when you're not in the environment of football. You can it's a different kind of conversation. It's a different thing. And I think that just helped us even bond closer without kind of having to think about football. And yeah, it was just, everyone was just like, I think everyone just wanted to do it for each other. It was a massive thing. Sounds a bit cringy. I don't know if it sounds a bit cringy, but it was like people, everyone was like really good mates. And we were like, let's do this. I think that's kind of.
So you touched on the whole thing about that the fans wouldn't be happy. Would you say then the fact that we are a fans owned club, did that have more of an emphasis, do you think, in comparison to, let's say, other teams that you've played for in the past? Did you actually feel that bond between the fans and the ownership, so to speak, model of the club and the players, or than other teams that you've played for in the past? Or
without a doubt. Like, I know you hear a lot of interviews, even from the boys now, being a fan-based club, and we do it for fans, but you do feel it. It's the boys aren't just saying that. It's so true. It's a completely different feel. I don't know who was saying it, but even like man of the match after the game, having all those people there, and it's a lot more interactive than I'd been at any other clubs. when you go out, you see, you say hi, and then you buy. Like, obviously, Ivor's a massive part of that, but the whole feel, and I obviously went, I normally went into the back bar after games anyway, because my mum and dad used to come down from Cardiff, and they were even after we'd lost, they were like, it was just such a more environment. I think that then you want to do more on the pitch. It's 100% is a different feel, massively.
Less corporate, more personal.
Definitely more personal, and definitely just, I don't know, yeah, it's just a lot more kind of, like you said, like more of a family feel.
It's that part of being like a non-league club, that's the good bit. The fact that that's,
yeah,
you go to a non-league football and that happens at non-league games or non-league clubs. I like the fact that even though we're in League One and we're playing against bigger teams like Sunderland and Portsmouth, who wouldn't do that, we'd still do that. I think I don't think we should lose that. Wherever level of football we go to, I still think that mixing players, and the players say hello to fans by name, that doesn't happen at other clubs. That's extremely amazing.
Do you think this is a question for you guys? Do you think it's going to be hard to keep that going into the new stadium?
No,
I don't.
No, because it's the same people. I think this, it's the people that do that, and we could do that anywhere. If we ended up sharing White Hart Lane, I still think we'd do it. It's the ethic of the people involved. But no, it's a good question.
Thank you. We've been doing it for long enough, right? As a fan base, that we've been hosting the man of the match things in the middle bar and all that. We've been doing it for so long that it doesn't matter where it would be, even if it was on Wimbledon Common. You know, we'd still do it. You know, it's how we've always been. Was that one of the main selling points for joining us permanently then, do you think?
I think it definitely helped in my time where we stayed up. But obviously Neil Ali was a massive, massive pull. He was a big factor in my career. And I think the fact that the team I could, at that time, I could see us going up, and I knew obviously Reevesy was going there as well, and I spoke to him before I joined. So I think there was a number of aspects, but I think that was definitely a big thing.
Were other clubs sniffing around?
Yeah, I had quite a few options at the time. But I think because I'd come off that horrendous injury at Oxford and the season after, I knew I wanted to go somewhere where I kind of knew, and also I knew the manager, and I think that was a massive thing for me.
Okay, well, you know, and the fact that we're always sold out at Kings Meadow, that's also something else that's got to obviously draw in quite a lot of players.
That stadium, I think someone posted on Instagram the other day, it was a great little stadium. It was something about it that you don't get in a lot of local stadiums. I remember when I was growing up, I had a season ticket at Ninian Park, which I'm not sure if any of you went to. Ninian Park was a little bit bigger, but it had that same old school feel to it, which I just loved. Might not be the biggest stadium and the most fans, but it was. I really enjoyed playing.
We've asked other players in the past. Do you remember any chants? And if you do, do you have any remember your favourite?
I just remember the AFC, but constantly. That just kind of sticks to my head.
We actually played that over the tannoys just to, you know, because we got bored singing it ourselves. No.
but they kind of all moved into well. And I think the best atmosphere was that time we beat, who we don't speak about. The first league game at home. That was probably the best atmosphere.
Because we created quite a, I hate the cliche, 50p in the cliche tin, as Kevin would say. We created quite a cauldron-esque kind of atmosphere that day. And I really believe that they kind of went into their shells a bit because they were not expecting that much vitriol from us.
Yeah.
How did that galvanize you guys even more? Or did you guys just straight away from the off, before you even stepped into the stadium, you knew, right, this is going to happen. This is, or was it more than you expected?
No, we knew. We did know, because obviously it does get talked about, but it did definitely kind of come up to the next level. So especially at King's Meadow, that it'd never been quite as electric as that. And actually, I think we're looking back at the game, I think they started pretty well. They started a little bit better than us. And I was like, oof. But that didn't matter. I think that's still like, that atmosphere kept up, and I think as soon as we got on the front foot, there was no going back. So
they were attacking well in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah,
they had a throw. I stand behind the, well, used to stand behind the home dugout. They had a throw at their left back, went to get the ball, And he looked up and just saw the amount of people that were just abusing him. And he looked absolutely scared. And you just think, I think we've got this. I can't remember who it was. It wasn't a personal thing. I know he's doing his job. But he just looked up and just saw. I used to stand, of course, in the Ryegas. Older people. It tends to be older people than children. So it's not the singers. It's kind of people who, you know, don't get that involved. My God. I would not want to be him. He just kind of looked up and you see the look on his face is like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I thought that we had him. That was he. If he looked scared, that would transfer to the other players. I think we did. I think the crowd played a massive part in that game. Obviously, we helped. But John, we better let you go because you've been talking to us for over an hour.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much indeed for your time. Well, good luck in the future. Do let us know and keep in touch. Let us know what you are doing in the with your next few months, your next career turn. But thank you for the
log back onto Twitter and just say hi once in a while.
No, I don't really. I'm on Instagram a little bit, but kind of social media is a lot of different things. But George, I just want to say, George, thanks. Make sure you keep up the difficulty, should I say, of those
challenge accepted. That's my little says.
I don't want anyone to get anything.
Yeah.
But John, thanks so much indeed, and good luck, and thank you for all the service you gave us. It was a pleasure watching you. So thanks so much indeed, and good luck.
Yeah, no, thanks for the support, guys.
Look after yourself. Stay healthy.
Thank you, guys.
See you later, guys.
George, next we've got the things, haven't we? We've got the things we do.
Yes.
Now, news items. Now we're going to look at news items to discuss very briefly because I thought John was great there. I could talk to him for much longer. Mark, do you have a news story?
I do. What's been going on over here is it's been a lot of stories, obviously, of what's going on just over the border, unfortunately, in Italy. And today there was the most wonderful, wonderful, wonderful story of how an Italian grandparent, husband and wife, got the opportunity for the first time to give their granddaughter a hug since lockdown happened 9-10 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that video is just, it's one of those where, and I hate that cliche of the hashtag of you're crying, I'm not crying kind of thing. It really is so touching to see. And the fact that there is light at the end of the tunnel, that we will eventually all get together to quote the Queen, I will shake your hand again or whatever she said, I can't remember. Yeah.
I'll get someone else to shake your hand.
So we will meet again. You know, that thing. It is so lovely to see that actually happening. And I, honest to God, I mean, we're stone's throw away. We've got a week to go, basically, before our lockdown here is going to be semi-lifted.
Yeah.
And it's something that is very, very much to look forward to. And hang in there. Everyone who's listening to this, hang in there. You'll get there. Believe me.
I think someone said to me that what they're looking forward to is walking past a coffee shop, deciding not to have a coffee. Now, that might sound stupid, but the point he's making was it's open, but I don't want one. Rather than walking past everything that's closed, you're actually walking past a coffee shop and deciding, no, I don't fancy one. It's that little thing that obviously we're looking forward to meeting your parents and girlfriends and boyfriends and stuff. But that little thing, I thought, I got that. Oh, that was quite a nice story. But good story, Mark. Thank you. My one is that in London, traffic levels are as they were in 1972 currently. So we've gone back 48 years before you two were born. Interestingly enough, last year in 2019, the average speed of traffic in central London was exactly the same as it was in 1919.
I know what that was. Wasn't it? It's 7 miles an hour.
It was. 7.1, in fact. Yes, yeah, so you're right, 7 miles an hour. So the car gave us our freedom, but in fact, overuse of the car was taking it away again. So traffic.
And we got the gas guzzlers of the 80s.
Exactly. Traffic speeds in central London last year were exactly the same as they were 100 years ago. George, your story is going to be about sports, so please tell us what it is.
My story is one that's been not as widely reported as it probably should have been today, and that's Rick Perry, the new chief executive of the EFL. Has basically come out and said the EFL clubs face a £200 million black hole by September if they don't get any major revenue streams by then. And it's basically pleading for grants or loans from the Premier League and the government. And I think this is just really going to show, yes, the Premier League and they're still talking about going behind closed doors, potentially starting as early as in 2 or 3 weeks training. But it just goes to show that there's problems lower down the pyramid that are running much deeper. And it's going to take a lot longer to hurt. And you read about the finances of clubs in the sort of Championship, League One, League Two. And below, even it, you look at Barrow and the amount of money they're losing this season. And it doesn't look good without major financial stimulus coming from the government or the Premier League. So yes, for me, that's my story, that clubs are in a lot of trouble. And if people are starting to wake up to the fact that most clubs are not in a financially stable place and are not run in a, what's the correct word here without
prudent,
getting trouble?
Prudent fashion. There you go.
Yes, prudent.
You mean Rick Perry, not Rick Perry.
Yes.
Harry.
They're playing fast and loose.
They are. Yes, that's a good point. That clubs really are. You think that if a club is so reliant on TV money, and then that may not happen, there are kind of businesses that shouldn't be running in some cases. Because if you run a bakery and you missed out on a day's bread sales and went bust, you think, well, hang on a minute, you're not doing very well there. It's kind of, it's horrible. We don't want football clubs to go under, but it's a fair point. So,
If I may quickly pass on to that. And I was having a conversation actually at the supermarket here today in New Zurich. And there was this gentleman who was saying that this lady on the radio, she was phoning up this talk radio, having a massive complaint about the fact that she has been self-employed now for the last 25 years, and actually now she's got to close up her business for the first time and actually make a couple of people redundant because of it. And the vitriol she got actually was quite immense because of the fact that she didn't have the cash reserves to make sure that she was able to continue. And that's where we're all just kind of like, wow, you know, there's so many different sides of it. If you don't have the cash revenue to continue the trading, you should have stuff in your bank. You can't work on an overdraft. But yeah, anyway.
Exactly. The world is currently over its overdraft limit, isn't it? Let's be fair. Things to do in lockdown. Mark, you're nearly at the end of lockdown in Switzerland. But what is your thing to do to occupy your friends and colleagues?
Puzzles. Cool. Absolutely puzzles. I have been going through more 1,000 and 1,000 plus piece puzzles like crazy. But here's a little anecdote for you. A colleague of Kerry's, he ordered what he thought was a 1,000 piece puzzle. Mm-hmm. He lives in Singapore, and he received a box with 100,000 pieces. Now,
wow.
1,000, yeah, he looked at the side of the box and it said the measurements. I can't tell you what they are right now because I didn't speak to him directly. But he said that he actually has no place in his apartment to actually do it. It's so big. So he's waiting for a week off where there's going to be no rain at all whatsoever. And he's going to do it on his balcony.
Take it to the park.
Well, Singapore's seriously under lockdown as well.
That's very true. But you could take it to a football club in Singapore, used to pitch, couldn't they? I mean, it's not been used, is it? George, I'm going to guess, as Mark is going to guess, that you are going to suggest that we do something related to sports. What is it, George?
Either BT Sports or Sky Sports is my guess.
It's one of the two, isn't it? It's one of the two. Go on, George. Regale us with your lovely tale.
It is sport-based, and my recommendation is on Thursday at 8 p.m. on Sky Sports Cricket. They're showing a documentary about how the 2009 Ashes series was won. So that's Thursday at 8 on Sky Sports Cricket.
Excellent.
Documentary, how it was won. One team beat the other. That's how it was won.
Yes, and let's spoil it. My thing is, as we've been doing all through lockdown, recommending albums I've not heard for a long time that have been working at home have given me the chance to listen to. 1989, The Adventures album, Sea of Love. Very, very good album indeed. The song Drowning in a Sea of Love, fantastic. The singer, Terry Sharp, at the time was engaged to Sarah Dallin from Bananarama, but don't hold that against her. Just thought I'd add that. But so The Adventures, Sea of Love, very, very good album. Not heard it. It's got to be 25 minutes since I played that album, but I played it this morning, and it's cracking. So I'm going to play it again tomorrow. So there you go.
I'm going to listen to the very best of it. And the reason why I've said that right now is to see whether... No, I'm just going to see whether Nick's going to make a reaction to that, so then we know that he's listened to this podcast right to the end.
Yes, if this makes it in, then maybe he hasn't. Yeah. He's just going to... But the sound's okay. We'll leave it in. So, George, the birthdays game, right? Do you have birthdays for the birthdays game for Mark and I to guess the ages of famous people?
Yes, we have five celebrities on the birth for the birthdays game this week.
Brilliant. Okay.
I'm afraid no mirror reader this week.
That's fine. I'm going to keep tally to see who wins. It's important. Mark and I are competitive people. Okay. Mark, do you want to go first?
I need the name.
The first celebrity, Craig David.
Craig David. He lives in Berlin. He's 30. No, he's 42.
I think so. Craig David's 38.
He is 39.
Oh. Can you know? I'm not joking. If you rewind that, I was just started to say 30, didn't I?
Rewind.
And I was, and I'm not joking, I was going to say 39.
But yeah, I know. I could hear you had just started to say 39. You had just started to say it and you bottled it. So congratulations, Kevin, for being closer.
But you did just say, can I rewind it? Which is rewind it. And the crowd say, you were wrong. Okay.
Bow selector.
Quite. George, who is the next celebrity we're getting, please?
Well, it's son of a famous person and professional footballer, Justin Kluivert.
Justin Kluivert.
Okay.
Kevin first.
22.
19.
He is, in fact, 21.
Oh. Close enough. Close enough for rock and roll. Next up, George.
Third celebrity, Adele. Yes.
Adele. Okay, I think we can work this out, can't we?
When was the computer invented?
Not Michael Dell. okay. So that's... Yeah, that means she's... Oh, hang on. So, she's 20... you can work it out by her album titles, can't you? If you know how old she was and what the albums are called.
26.
I think she's got to be 31.
She is 32.
Oh.
Clean sweep.
I'm getting there. Two more. Yeah, I've actually won on penalties here, but... Can I ask a question before? Mark, the 1996 European Championships semi-final between England and Germany, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember what the score was on pens? Because I didn't.
5-4.
No. 6-5. Because I thought
because it went to a sudden death.
Yes,
it went to sudden death. Of course,
that
it goes.
That six pen. Paul Ince should have taken that six pen and bottled out. Well done, Paul Ince. Yeah. And of course, he went on to manage that team we all love to despise. So well done, Paul Ince, for keeping that up. Okay, George, number four.
So the fourth celebrity is Wolves striker Raúl Jiménez.
I'm going to guess 28.
I'm going to guess 25.
He is 29.
Ugh.
No way. Get the hell out of Dodge.
I've been one out every time. I've been 1 year out every time. I've got to get one right.
Hang on. That means that you haven't won, technically.
Technically, no. No. I'm happy.
I'm not letting go of that one.
I'm just drawing slightly ahead of you. Okay, go on. Go, George. Who's the fifth?
Okay,
person?
And the last one. Someone with an AFC Wimbledon connection. Mm. It's a fairly strenuous connection this time because there's no player I've been able to find. So it's brother of AFC Wimbledon sponsor, and the guest is Hank Green.
So John Green's brother?
The brother of John Green.
Well, I don't know how old John Green is, but oh God, Hank Green. I don't know at all, so I'm going to guess 36 because I have not a clue. Mark?
39.
He is 40.
Martin.
Oh, one away. No, none of us won. That's what I'm clinging on to. We didn't get any correct. So.
I was closer four times. But yeah, okay. But I haven't.
I think that is the first time we've been playing it in lockdown that no one has got any absolutely correct.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time that's happened.
But all five were within one. All five we did get were within 1 year. That's kind of fun. There you go. Right. So we have. We think this is the last of these weekly shows. We're not really sure. But there is another one because, of course, the podcast itself returns on Friday as ever. So there we go. The international squad job complete. Well done, George. Thank you, Mark. Thank John.
Thank you very much for having us.
Great guest, very eloquent player, very intelligent guy. We know that. Obviously, if you needed proof that John Meads is not your average footballer, I don't mean that in any disregard to anybody else. But what a great guest. So thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay sane. And you'll hear
keep
from
washing
us.
Your hands.
Keep washing your hands, of course. Do I have to say Alexa Bliss? Keep it Alexa bag first. Yes, yeah? That's the way to sign off.
Alexa Bliss bag first, milk last.
Yes, and wash your hands. Thanks, everyone. Speak soon.